Hi everyone, welcome to our second monthly call, March 17th, happy St. Patty's Day. Today we're going to talk about elevator pitches and back cover blurbs or book descriptions. But first let's do a check-in. Ezra, how are you doing with your writing and your marketing and your everything?
Behind.
Any word or phrase to express how you feel?
Joyful at the spring break that's coming next week.
Yay.
Yay.
So you're going to work on your book then?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Great. Yes. All right. Who would like to go next? Check-in time. Put us in queue. All right, Hugh, I'm going to put you in the spotlight. There you go. Awesome.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, it's good to see you.
Good to see you too. Yeah, glad I was able to make it finally.
Yeah.
So the one word for me right now is stalled.
Okay.
That's how I feel about my writing right now. I've got a lot of things going on and a lot of personal business I needed to take care of, and finally got my taxes done tonight. So that's off my back. My taxes are complicated and it requires a lot of paperwork. So I started to feel guilty initially when I wasn't really writing much, and then I just had to say, just give yourself a break, take care of business, and then come back to it.
Yeah, great.
So this weekend I'm going to get back to it. I've got a lot of time. I'm just going to go off to a little quiet space and just start going again.
Yeah, good, yeah. Great, right. Yeah, glad to have you here. Yay. Who's next? Nadine? So I can see you. I'm going to put you in the spotlight, on the spot.
Do you hear me right now?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So I'm at the finish line almost, which edit is due for March 28th. And I have new discovery this week. This was cool too.
Oh, a new discovery. Yeah. Great. All the time. Wonderful. Great. Well, I'm glad you're here and I'm glad that you submitted a pitch that we'll play with.
I try to.
Yeah. Great. Excellent. Thank you. And Sal, do you want to go?
Sure. Can you hear me okay? Since I'm on my tablet.
We can hear you fine. Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, obviously I was playing with some stuff that I had written a while ago, kind of taking a break from the editing. It was kind of interesting to reread something I had written more than 10 years ago and actually see how much my writing has changed in a good way. It still is fundamentally me, no matter how much I've grown as a writer, but it was interesting to realize that even after that long, those stories still worked. Like, I wasn't I wasn't sure if it would. I don't know if it's actually anything that's all that great, but it was kind of interesting to just sort of look at that and to try to write something and rewrite something that already existed, since that's not something I'm very good at. Mm. Editing to me has always been very difficult when it comes to sort of redoing stuff. Mm. And I don't have a good phrase this week, except for, sometimes you've got to look back to see forward, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. It's really wonderful to see how far you've come and evolved as a writer, and it's a safe thing to edit. You're so far removed from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the process can be, it's a good place to put on the training wheels of editing and on something that you're not maybe attached to or even remember creating.
Yeah. It's helped that it's so far removed. I never feel terribly married to the words that I choose when I write something. Yeah. So changing them isn't, that doesn't usually bother me, mm-hmm. but it's hard to edit something that I wrote, like, say, a year ago, because I remember what I thought I put in place, and that may not be what actually ended up on the page. Whereas this being so far removed, it was really easy to see where, no, that's not actually what I meant to have initially, and was able to fix it. So yeah. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. And what a great reflection of the process of editing, because I too, if I remember too much the what it felt like to write it, and I can't see really what's on the page, then I'm too close to it and I have to set it aside. I definitely distance myself. Yeah. Great. Well, thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, Carol, we're doing check-ins, and you're up if you want. You're next to last. So I'll put you in the spotlight there.
Spotlight.
Spotlight.
It's so hot down here. I've had the fan on.
Wow.
Check-in. Yeah. Check-in. There's just a feeling of kind of stuckness now, and I've been trying to write about it, and I think, you know, if I just write, something will break loose and something will happen, and then I'll get my pages, I'll get them out, and or I'll open up the book, and distraction.
Yeah.
Distraction. Uh-huh. And people need you, or, and so, yeah, I'm just, I feel, I'm trying to find a metaphor. Like, I want to get on the merry-go-round. I just can't catch hold of the horse that I really like.
Okay. So. Yeah, that's a very, very vivid image.
I keep running after the merry-go-round.
Yeah, yeah. And I can imagine how frustrating that is.
It is, very much so.
Yeah, yeah. But you do have your eye on the prize. You have your eye on the horse you want.
I do, you know, and the launch date looms, so there's a deadline.
Yep. Great. Well, I'm glad you're doing the running and not just watching it go around without running after it. Yeah, no care. You're after it. You're in that process. And, you know, I've been feeling that too, that it can be very frustrating when you're in the creative muck of a project and things are just not going the way you'd like. But you have to be in motion. You have to be working on it anyway. So, kudos for you. And maybe there's a new strategy or new tool or a way to, you know, metaphorically talk to the person to slow down that merry-go-round or, you know, something creative that we haven't thought of yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Good. Thank you. And I will go. I want to do a little show and tell. Here it is. So speaking of the muck, I'm editing book 3 of Henrietta. This is only, yesterday's pages. So this is about 80 pages. This thing is almost 400 pages long. And it is so messy. I have to put post-its on it to sort of give me a sense of like bite-sized chunks. Otherwise I get freaked out by a stack even this big. So I divide them in about 20-page chunks, so I feel a sense of pacing. And I guess my word or phrase would be, you know that feeling that you have when you're like swimming the breaststroke and a little bit of water gets in your mouth, but you know you just got to keep going. It's kind of uncomfortable, but you know if you just keep going, you'll get to the edge of the pool. Yeah, kind of like that. Does that describe a little bit of discomfort? Good. And the, okay, let me put this back in my bag before it hits this place. Okay, all right, good. So did we get everyone? I think we got everyone who's here today, yes. And great, so today I thought we could focus on elevator pitches. Well, really, actually, they're book descriptions, book blurbs, the things that typically go on the back of the book, but also go into the book description in all your marketing. And it's part of what's called the metadata. And it's a very essential part of it. And there are some other elements of the book blurb that we're not covering today that I'm constantly learning about, like how to make it keyword rich and how to have a good tagline. And although we cover some of that in our pitches. And then lastly, what I've been learning recently, because I'm having someone help me polish up my blurbs for the Henrietta books, is a call to action where you compare your books to other similar books. But we're not going to cover that today or keyword stuff today. We're just going to talk about the meat and potatoes, the core of the story, how do you get all your information in, and how do we make it compelling in the short space that we have. So it, like what we did, some of you were in our editing class, we're actually, I have prepared ahead of time, we have four pitches to go over. I have Carol's and Nadine's and Ezra's and mine. And this is something that also I want to invite everyone to be sharing your pitches as you write them, your book descriptions, and putting them in the group and asking for feedback. And today we're just shining a spotlight on it to hopefully clarify and help you in your progress. And even if you're not yet ready to write one of these, hopefully this will be a learning space as well. I know, Hugh, you're not quite there yet. So, and then post your questions in the chat. I'll be doing the work, and Ezra can keep an eye on chat for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, you're all welcome to chime in with comments and questions and stuff like that, so we can all learn together. Great. So with that said, is there any questions before I dive in? Nope. Okay. Oh, Carol has a question. Yes, Carol.
I'm confused. Maybe this is part of it. What's the difference between an elevator pitch, which you kind of want really, really short if you don't have a lot of time in your elevator, compared to the little bit longer back of the novel? It still wants the same thing, but you need a little bit more words than you would just a regular elevator pitch. Is that right, or am I not?
Yes. No, you got that entirely right. Yes. So I keep saying elevator pitch because that's what I've been trained in. Like, how do you pitch to an agent? What do you say if you have that short amount? That's where it came from, the idea. Not that you're actually pitching in an elevator, but that you have a brief amount of time when you meet an agent at a sit-down thing at a conference. You want to be succinct. You don't want to ramble on. So, or when you're sending out a query letter, you want it to be succinct and you don't want to ramble on. So yes, the back cover, book blurb or book description is extended. It has a few more elements. You have more space, but you still want to be short. You still don't want to ramble on. So yes, you have it exactly right. Excellent. All right. So what I want to do right before I switch my screen is just close everything that's not necessary. I'm learning the hard way that when I have other things open, then it just, everything slows down. So we're closing Chrome, we have that open. And Word. Okay. Yay. Okay. Now I can share my screen. All righty. Okay. Share screen. Word. Can you guys see that? I'm gonna minimize my video. Yes. Yay. All right, Carol's book is up. It's called Sunday Punch, right, Carol?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So I'll read it once through. Yeah. I purposely set it, what is that called? Landscape. So hopefully the whole thing will fit on the page. And I have track changes on, so changes I make will show up. So, LA, 1955. Somebody's icing the Mickey Cohen's Night Watchman. Detective Mark DeLuca is flummoxed. Height-fearing, loser at love, Detective DeLuca has four dead men on his hands. Caught at the scene of the last murder is a heavyweight boxer, a kid named Nico Dominique, and his knockout older sister, Helene. One haughty glance from this black-haired, brown-eyed doll hit him like a Sunday punch, the shot that puts you on the canvas from Sunday to Sunday. Used to bringing thugs to justice, the prime suspect and trigger man might be a fellow detective. Finding evidence is proving harder than keeping his hands off Helene. When Helene disobeys his direct command to not investigate on her own, she's kidnapped by the suspects and used to lure DeLuca to his death. Can DeLuca overcome his fear of heights to save Helene before she plummets to her death on the canvas during her brother's boxing match? So I just want to say overall, Carol, this is pretty good. You have all the key elements here, in my opinion. You think so too?
Yeah, and okay. I like the word choices.
Yeah, you've done a lot of them. What's that?
I said, way cool.
Way cool, absolutely. And you've done, yeah, your word choices, you really kept to the voice of your 1950s, like without even knowing, I think most readers would catch it, this has got a noir element.
Yeah, using icing and flummoxed and, yeah. Mickey. Yeah.
Mickey Cohen.
Yeah.
Oh. So that said, I want to say I like flummoxed. I like the word flummoxed, but we have a weak verb here, and I'm wondering if we could strengthen this verb with something else. I'm not really sure. So that's just something that jumps out at me, wishing it was a little bit more bam, bam, you know, a little more punchy since you've got boxing in here.
That's not our phone.
And our phone is ringing. Do you want to quickly check or you want to?
That's my stomach. I'm hungry.
That's your stomach. Okay. And then I like that you've given us some adjectives for DeLuca, height fearing, loser at love. I would actually, because we're going to talk about your height, the height issue later in your pitch, to take away height fearing and say something more about his character as a detective. So I'm not really sure what that would be, Carol. Like, you know,
I wondered, you know, because I said his fear of heights, you know, later.
Yeah.
If there wouldn't be a connection, and so.
I don't think you need to mention it twice. You know, it's not like a story where we have to set it up. You know, like we know you've done that in the story, but is there some other adjective about what I'm curious about is what is his quality as a detective? Like he's a straight arrow versus, right? Because there's some shady men on the force.
Yes.
So I would say like straight shooter, straight arrow. What is a term that would indicate that he's a good cop versus a dirty cop? Because you've got the theme of dirty cops in here.
Yeah, straight shooter is a good one.
Okay, so we'll start with that, straight shooter. And I think loser at love is fun because it also indicates to the romance readers that this is kind of the way he thinks about himself and that it is involving a romance. Yeah?
Yeah. Nodding. Yeah, no, okay. I love that.
Okay. And, you know, you start with a punch, four dead men on his hands, and maybe is there, like, thug? Is there, like what is it about these men that are... You know, I don't know.
Well, they do work for a gangster, so I don't know. Would you say they're thugs? I guess you could say that.
That kind of adds a little more spice.
Okay.
So caught at the scene of the last murder is heavyweight boxer. I don't know why this is. Maybe it's one word. I don't know. Kid named Nico Dominic and his knockout. I like the description of Helene, knockout older sister. We get that she's really pretty. And I like the next sentence, the description, how her glance hits him like a Sunday punch. Actually, I think you need to stay in present tense here. I love that you tell us exactly what Sunday punch is for all the people who don't know, and it really, we really get that this is throwing him, you know, for a loop.
It's great.
Yeah. Now this sentence is missing a misplaced modifier. I think you're talking about Mark, right? Used to bringing thugs to justice. Mark suspects that the prime suspect is a fellow detective. Is that what you mean here?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
So DeLuca suspects the trigger man. I would say maybe, just to break it down and not say suspect twice, maybe suspects the trigger man might be a fellow detective, a dirty cop, or I don't know. That would be, might be, I don't know. I want to put dirty cop in there, but maybe we don't need to because it's already implied. And for some reason, my word here thinks that trigger man should be two words, but I don't know. You know better than me because it's probably it. Sure. Okay. Finding evidence is proving harder than keeping his hands off Helene. I like that.
Yeah.
And then we don't need a comma here. When Helene disobeys his direct command to not investigate on her own, she's kidnapped by the suspects. Dun, 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 I love it. Used to lure DeLuca to his death. Can he, I would say, probably, you think that's...
This next paragraph is the one spot I was concerned with. Because my understanding of back cover blurbs and elevator pitches is it gives the overall conflict. And if the overall conflict is having to overcome a fear of heights before she plummets to her death, if that's like the beginning of the story, no, then that's fine. But if this sounds like the end of the story.
Yeah, it is the climax.
So it's like you're revealing this is the whole story. And now, if in a typical romance blurb, you talk about the hero and the heroine, you can have two paragraphs. So it makes sense to kind of start over from the beginning of the story when talking about Hélène.
Yeah, it would be great to add in more about her challenges. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So like, and then
challenges and goals. Because
exactly,
what's missing is, you know, what she's really up to.
Okay, like she doesn't want a man. She doesn't believe. Yeah. She doesn't trust them.
There you go.
Yeah.
Doesn't exactly. Right. And so kind of right from the beginning, like he's hit like a Sunday punch when he meets her. What is her response? You know, there's attraction, there's interest, there's needing to prove that she can stand on her own 2 feet.
Yeah.
You know, I know because I've read this whole book that she has a really interesting and challenging backstory, and you have sort of this backdrop of her trauma during World War II, and that she's an immigrant, that her and her brother are immigrants. So I don't know if any, there's some pieces of that you might want to put in there.
Yeah. And what little I pick up from this, it seems like the big beginning conflict, and I could be totally wrong, is her wanting to investigate on her own and ignore his myth. But maybe there's even an even bigger conflict I just don't know about yet.
No, actually, I mean, that is a huge conflict in your story, Carol, is about how she's very
stubborn
and also wants to do things her way, and then he fears for her safety, and that's a big conflict in your story. So I would say replace this with the interpersonal conflict and the mystery, because you don't have anything here, you know, like in your story boxing is a big theme. I want you to bring that out a bit more. So give it another go and then pass it, put it back into the group. Yeah. And we'll be happy to massage it with you.
I mean, really, it looks like the first paragraph is outstanding.
Yeah. The first paragraph, you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Or I don't know, boxing metaphor for that. Something like that.
You punch the nail in the head.
Punch the nail in the head. Oh my gosh. It was a good right hook, a very strong right hook.
That's right.
Very good. Good. Any questions on this, Carol?
I went to a lot of the fight card books and read the backs, and so theirs is the three paragraph thing, because even though they might have a love interest, theirs is not a romance. It's not, you know, theirs is about the boxing and whatever situation the boxer finds himself. He might have a gal, he might not. So I was trying to play off that, because that was also on the back of my ladies' night book. So I didn't do the classic his paragraph, her paragraph, then wind up like you do in a romance novel.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, and I don't know if Paul, since it's his series, would say anything that's gotta stay true to the fight card book, or if I can take a little leeway and have her stuff in there too.
I would say go for it, because your book is a romance versus their books that aren't.
Yeah.
And then you would have that version as well.
Exactly. Okay. If need be, if you need to submit to a non-romance for whatever reason, you can cut the second paragraph. I think the first one works by itself.
By itself, it does. Mm-hmm. And then I just started writing, you know, this is something we've talked about in the book reviews class, like what are the comparable titles, even if they're not current titles. Like if anybody loves Norman Chandler's books, I would even say, and there's probably some more, you know.
Yeah, Dashiell Hammond's Maltese Falcon. Right. I'm reading it right now.
Yeah. Oh, I love that book. Yeah. So those are classics. And then there's probably some current books that you can find as well. So one more title, really. One or two more titles. Maltese Falcon. Et cetera. Yes, Bill.
Would you say in the vein or after the?
You could write for fans of Chandler's this, Hammett's that, you know. And then you could say something like comes a noir.
We call it a new pulp, is what it's called.
New pulp.
I love that.
Set in gritty 1950s LA boxing world. Because I think the boxing world, you do such a good job with it. You know, really own it. Gritty, like I meant to say LA's boxing world, something like that. I'm sure I spelled dash wrong. Yes, two L's. Okay, good. Does anyone else have anything to add or contribute for Carol? You can come on audio or video, but I can't see you because I have the...
Hugh loves it.
Yay, thanks, Hugh. And Hugh says, doing great.
That's
something else. That's
Carol
a conversation.
Carol will say hi to him.
Okay, private conversation. Sorry. Okay, well then we'll move on. And we have Nadine.
Nadine also said it was great.
Nadine said it was great. Yay! All right, this is for Nadine's book called Unbind in the SAI Special Operations series or something like that. I'm not sure what that is. All right, so this is Nadine's first draft. Awesome. Montreal, 2015, paranormal faculty. I don't really know what that means.
I'm thinking facility, but...
Is it facility or is it university? Because I've read the first chapter. So Nadine, maybe you can tell us what this is.
University.
Is it a university? University. Okay. Well, then let's just fix that and take this out. It's times like this, I wish I had a bigger screen. University. Great. Paranormal university. Usually universities have a little bit... stronger name, so maybe University of something, I don't know. And then I see in your note here, intelligence agency.
Yeah, supernatural intelligence agency. And it
special
even says
operations.
Here.
Okay, got it. So I think you, for the purposes of your brand, SIA, to me is a little vague. I would love it if your series name could be Super Intelligence Agency series. To me, that's just so much more interesting. Yeah. Instead of abbreviating it, because when you abbreviate it, it's mysterious.
Yeah.
Okay, a witch died in weird circumstances, which brings Supernatural Intelligence Agency group to investigate and protect students in the university. Rook, a werewolf, is the commander of his group under his chief boss. He dedicated his life to his job and to protect each individual that I think you mean that needs to be
protected.
Right. He's the oldest werewolf of his group until he meets her. That flipped his word. I know you
flipped
mean
his word upside
his
down.
His world.
I love that typo.
We like that typo. His world upside down. Azura, one of the powerful witches. I think upside down is all one word. Is it? Oh, I can do that. Azura, one of the powerful witches, didn't control any of it. After abandoned by her biological parents and from her foster parent after they discover she was a witch. She didn't, I think you mean, have anyone except a few friends and the director of university. Emotion will trigger her magic all around, having the four elements in her power bring more responsibility and she can't control it, I think. Will Rook be able to protect her after discovering an ancient wizard that tried to get free from his magical binding and with his minions on the loose in this world. Also, will he be able to fight his wolf that wants to claim her? Will he be able to convince her that she is the one for him and his wolf? Okay, so we'll fix some of the typos in there. Everyone remember, English is not Nadine's first language. French is. So doing a great job, Nadine. So we'll clean this up a little bit. I think you have most of the elements here. And you give us right away the circumstance, the situation of your story. And I think readers, because I think you're writing, would this be called urban paranormal? So it is a romance, but it's also a much bigger story as well. So maybe you can tell us what this genre is, Nadine. So a witch died in weird circumstances, which brings the supernatural intelligence agency group to investigate and protect the students at the university. So does that match what you intend so far, Nadine? Ten books, yeah. Urban fantasy, yes. I would agree that this is urban fantasy. So Nadine, is that what your intention is? So Rook, a werewolf, is the commander of his group under his chief boss. Now, I don't know why you need under his chief boss, other than I think to emphasize the fact that he's not the big boss. So maybe you can, I wonder if there's another way.
Although even if people accidentally believe he is the boss, I don't think it matters.
Yeah, I really think you can just cut this because we don't need to know from everything you have in here that's important. Is that you, Nadine, coming on the audio?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's because the cheese is going to be important with the other book is coming. So I just want to make an introduction the same way that the director is going to be with each book is coming.
Okay. Well, I don't think it's necessary for this book description because if he becomes a more important character, then you can put it in the description. But he's a secondary character, and your pitch so far, you know, the description is about the two main characters plus the bad guys. So. I don't think, you need them. Need it. And so you want to keep pitching, you want to keep these in present tense. So he's dedicated, he has dedicated his life to, right, would you say?
I thought this meant he
dedicated his life. Yeah, present tense. He has dedicated his life to his job and to protect each individual and to protect everyone, right?
Yes.
So we can cut that down. To protect all people against what? Against supernatural creatures?
Against everything, because the paranormal world is the, like, more the CIA for them, you know, in the paranormal world is the CIA versus the CIA for the human world.
Okay, so it's all, I said all evil, but maybe all enemies?
Or all threat, maybe?
Threat,
you know, somebody is threatening you.
Threaten, all threats.
Yeah.
Mm, great. To protect people, all people, so it would be all of the Canadians or all of the Montreal people or what people?
Yeah, all the paranormal community, whatever it is. They are everywhere.
So protect the, so that's interesting because it's just the paranormal community. That's really, protect the entire paranormal community against all threats. Now we have a better idea of the scope. He's the oldest werewolf in his group. And then now until he meets her that flips his world upside down, you're giving me, it's as if it's opposition or something opposite the sentence that went before when you say until.
Okay.
So what is it opposing? I mean, I would say it's not that interesting that he's the oldest werewolf, but what's interesting is that maybe either that he's serious or that he's a very calm person and maybe she upsets his life, you know?
Is she older than he is?
Yes, she's around mid-20 and is closer to 30 around.
That's not... I don't think that's so important. I mean,
but in the group, there are 9 individuals in the group, which means we have 4 werewolf, 1 vampire, 1 berserker, 1 magic warrior, 1 bird shifter, 1 bear shifter, and I think that is, yeah.
Okay, well, what is a quality about him? Is he calm? Is he in control? Is he...
He's in control. She will put him on control.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's the contrast I'm looking for. So, so something like used to being in control in the most difficult of cases, if because this is a case, right? He meets her on a case.
It says meeting her flips his world.
Thank you. See, this is why we have it. Right. Again, I can't like do all the creative work and time. Okay. Meeting her flips his world upside down. All right. So does that work, Nadine?
Yeah.
Now we keep what it is you right.
Or you could say that meeting her makes him lose his control, or somehow there's got to be a loss of control when he meets her or something.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah,
because his wolf wants to try to control him to blame her.
He sets his world upside down.
He loses control.
I want to say something like
how about I can't think. Something about the wolf pushing out.
I know, yeah. Well, like, you know what? We're going to get to that in a bit, so let's not reveal everything too soon. This is good for, because we're just, you know, this is what romance readers are expecting too, that it's going to be something like that. So, so let's go to Azura. Azura, one of the most powerful witches, in the community, in the world, in the what?
In everything, because nobody have the four element control.
Okay. And when you say didn't control any of it, maybe can't control her magic?
Right. Yeah, but she have too much power, so emotion trigger a lot of things for her,
right.
Including clumsiness. That's one thing also.
Okay. I didn't really hear that. You want to say that again?
I say that not only that her magic is too much powerful for her now, just now,
yeah.
But also she's clumsy because she has no confidence of herself, which
right.
is okay. other emotion that trigger.
I don't know if you need to say that here in the pitch.
Yeah. Okay.
After abandoned by her biological, is it just one parent or two?
Two
parents, and from her foster parents after they discover she's a witch.
Yeah, I will put human foster parent.
Okay, so biological witch parents.
Yes.
And human, and from her human foster parents, mm-hmm. after they discover she's a witch, what happens? Oh, I see. She doesn't.
Well, the elders and the director come back to grab her, and we bring her back in the paranormal world, which is not fitting because she was too old for that at that time.
Okay, well, that's too much information, but I think we just need to edit this. She doesn't have many friends.
Okay.
How about abandoned by a biological and human foster parents? After discovering she's a witch.
Our biologicals, they are two witches.
Oh.
Doesn't have many friends. She doesn't have many friends. That, you know, this is the main thing, is that she's kind of isolated and alone.
Yeah, right.
The clumsiness, you know, you can reveal in the story. Emotion, and then present tense, emotion triggers her magic.
I was upside down, to be honest, to be
okay.
all the way.
That's something to, we already said upside down, so I wonder if that triggers her, how about her crazy or uncontrollable? Triggers her uncontrollable magic, and then maybe something like having the four elements at her disposal brings more responsibility that she can't control. I don't know if we need to...
more responsibility than she can handle or something.
Than she can.
Yeah.
Okay. Motion triggers
on. Thank you. And then I'm thinking cutting the word after, so it just says abandoned by her biological
right. witch. Yeah, there we go. It's a descriptor of her. So we kind of said that she can't control her magic a few different ways. Mm-hmm. So,
right. And then she doesn't trust nobody in the way.
Very good. That's what's really important. She doesn't trust anybody.
Yeah.
And what keeps to herself, isolates herself.
Yeah. Well, she moves, you know, she's more like the rejected one because they felt she's a weirdo.
Uh-huh.
She's having magic late and everything came late, but became more powerful. And she doesn't have any much control. All an emotion can trigger something, a disaster inside of the university, which it did a few times.
All right. This is not quite right, but we're going to leave it for now, just in the interest of time and see. Will Rook be able to protect her after discovering an ancient wizard has tried to get free from his magical binding and with his minions loose in the world? Also, will he be able to fight his wolf that wants to claim her? And will he be able to convince her she's the one for him and his wolf? So I'm not 100% happy with this. My process would be to accept all changes and edit it again, because I'm starting to go blind with all the edits in here. So what I would say, Nadine, is clean this up and present it again in the group, and we can continue to work on it. But I think it's getting there. I think you could be more specific about your magic, because I know that people who read urban fantasy, like, there's nothing in it yet that totally makes the conflict stand out. Like, why would Azura reject him? So, mm-hmm. So we get that she doesn't trust people, so that's good. But is there also something against, you know, witches and werewolves? Is there sort of a thing, or is there, you know, I don't quite know what the reason why they can't be together.
Okay.
That's what's missing from a romance standpoint. And you've got the fantasy standpoint in here.
Okay.
You might want to add this sentence instead of just protecting. It's more than just protecting her that he has to deal with this magician. And you know,
the magician wants to kill her. That's what he wants. He wants his magic.
That's why the magician is there in the first place.
Yeah.
I see. But
he cannot be here. He's in the other dimension.
Okay.
So he released his demon for that. It was minion, depending on the stories.
Right. Yeah, I think, and this is describing the first book, right?
Yep.
Good. Yeah, you don't want to bleed into the other stories. Just
no.
The time. This is enough. does this help? Did we?
Yeah.
So I would say in your case, try and add a little bit more specifics. Like, I'd be curious, you know, about... maybe it goes like this, something like this, so we know a little bit more about her. So Azura, one of the most powerful witches in the world, can't control her magic, having the four elements in her power, or under her power, I'm not really sure, brings more responsibility than she can handle. So that's a little bit about intense emotion triggers her uncontrollable magic, something like that. And then we find out that she doesn't trust anyone and shunned by her peers. Good. Okay. So now we see like what all her problems are.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Any last words? You're welcome. Any last words about Nadine?
Leo
typed some words. Okay. But lots of misspellings, Leo. Okay. All right, let's move on. We're going to go to mine and then yours, okay?
Yeah.
All right, so this is my first draft. This is for my next book that I'm working deeply on, Henrietta and the Battle of the Horse Mesa, book 3 in a series. So here is my first attempt. The final book in the Henrietta the Dragon Slayer trilogy reunites the four friends to face their biggest challenges yet. Sworn to protect all kingdoms, Henrietta, the legendary Dragonslayer of Bluv, now must lead her people into the biggest battle of her life against a sorcerer bent on destroying her and overtaking all five kingdoms. But first, she must rescue her more than friend Frank from the men who stole him right under their noses. Paulette, the Fire Witch, desires only to master her fire so she can come to the aid of her friends at battle. Yet, she must first stand trial for a murder she had to commit out of desperation. Unable to stand the confinement and, I'm missing a lot of articles here, and the stinging betrayal of her friend Jaxter, now the king, she escapes into the unknown and flees to the frigid and forbidden land of Varengia to find the Volcano Witch, where she must let go of everything in pursuit of mastering her power. Jaxter is no longer a jester and must come to terms with his new role and responsibilities and protocol as king of the Oro Islands, his old home. He must leave behind his lightheartedness to embrace running a complicated kingdom, recovering from being under an evil king for over 75 years. And he must make things right, including putting his dear friend Paulette on trial for the murder she committed back in Bluv. So it probably needs a few more things, but I noticed a few things I wanted to fix right away. And if you guys have comments, Ezra, do you
I need to reread it.
Okay, you don't.
So go ahead.
Oh, okay, so the final book reunites the four friends to face their biggest challenges yet. I'm okay with that. What I was kind of reaching for was like a summation statement slash kind of like, it's not quite a tagline, but gives you the headline. So, and then I thought, sworn to protect all, it's actually not five kingdoms, but...
Well, it's good as it is.
Okay, Henrietta, the legendary dragon slayer of Bluv, now must lead her people into the biggest battle of her life against a sorcerer. I think this is okay. Bent on destroying her and overtaking all five kingdoms, which is true. But first, she must rescue her more than friend Frank from the men who stole him right under their noses. And I was like, I said their noses, because what's missing here is who she was with and all this stuff. And I don't even say anything about the horse people. I don't know if I need to.
Yeah, I don't think you need to. In fact, okay. I would change that to her because
right under, yeah, otherwise then it's confuses. Personal. Yeah, and they don't know. Okay. Okay, so far?
Yeah, and then the ellipses distracts me.
Okay. Okay, we could just do a comma. That's why I married you. Tell me to replace an ellipsis.
Or okay. Yeah, or start a new sentence.
Okay. Sure. Okay, and then on to Paulette. Is anybody leaving? Oh, Trent's here. Hi, Trent. Yeah, better late than never. Awesome. Paulette, the Fire Witch, desires only to master her magic, her fire magic. It's really fire magics, but I thought it might be confusing because I always add an S to the word magic in my stories, and I didn't want to do that here.
Always.
So she can come to the aid of her friends at battle. Come to the aid of her friends. Yeah, I don't know if I should say in the battle that's looming or the looming battle.
Yeah, I think. Shorter is better.
Shorter is better. Me too. Yet she must first stand trial for a murder she had to commit out of desperation, which is backstory, and it's in book one, so I didn't want to say too much, but I will revisit it in the book, of course. Unable to stand the confinement and the stinging...
Betrayal.
Way too many words here. And the stinging betrayal of her friend Jaxter, now the king, she escapes into the unknown, which she really, she like breaks out of prison and all this stuff. Do I need to be more specific?
I think I'd leave out into the unknown and just say flees into the frigid forbidden land.
Okay. Yeah, why don't I just say she escapes prison because that's what she's got.
Yeah.
And flees to the frigid forbidden land to find the Volcano Witch. Where she must let go of everything in pursuit of mastering her power. Yeah. We got the stakes.
Yeah, and that'd be a continuation of the sentence, like.
Yeah, but it's already really long. The previous sentence, yeah, and it's kind of.
Yes, her friend. She escapes prison, please. It's just that's a partial.
I know.
Okay, we can fix that later.
Okay. Anything to add, Carol?
No, I really like the alliteration, the fleas of the frigid forbidden land. Ooh. To find the witch.
That's great.
That's how that works.
Instead of where, say there.
There she must let go.
Thank you. Very nice.
That's there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hugh.
Hugh, that's great. All right, moving on. Jaxter is no longer a jester and must come to terms with his new role, responsibilities, and protocol, as king of the Oro Islands, his old home. He must leave behind his lightheartedness to embrace running a complicated kingdom, recovering from being under an evil king for over 75 years.
Sounds like he was under an evil king and not the king.
Okay. That was recover. Really? Doesn't modify the word right before it?
Well, I mean, maybe with that comma, no, it doesn't.
Right.
But without the comma, maybe it does. Anyway, it's the way I heard it was that he's recovering.
He's recovering, right.
One that is recovering.
Any thoughts, anyone else? It needs massaging, but I think it's. And then last sentence, and he must make things right, including.
How about if you rearrange that sentence and say, he must leave behind his lightheartedness, or in order to run a complicated kingdom, just recovering from an evil spell. He must leave behind his lightheartedness, or something like that. And this is the reverse a little bit, and then you can get in the kingdom recovering, and then him embracing. Does that make sense?
Yep. I think he must.
Hugh says he must leave behind his lightheartedness to take on the heavy burden of running a kingdom recovering.
That's great.
Your reign of an evil king.
All right.
I still read that as.
You still read that as. Well, let me try this way.
Yeah.
Oops. And then we'll move on to Ezra's. In order to run a complicated kingdom, one that is carving from being under anyone.
He must abandon his lightheartedness. Lightheadedness.
Lightheadedness. You must. Abandon his lightheartedness and his love of cooking.
That's right.
That's right. He really points out that lightheartedness could work in a king.
It could. So it's probably not the right word. It's like
his
carefree.
Yeah.
His carefree
lifestyle. Yeah. Carefree life.
And his love of cooking. Okay, in order to run around, okay. And he must make things right, for he is now Jaxter the Just, including putting his dear friend on trial for murder she committed. But there's more. And there's more.
You know, I don't know. I don't think you need Jaxter the Just.
Okay.
I thought the sentence was extremely powerful as this.
Yeah, I think it's the personal. I mean, he's, okay. Shall we move on?
Thank you. I don't remember Paulette killing someone. I'm going to have to read your book again.
Book one.
Okay.
All right. Okay, let's move on to Ezra. Ezra's third book in the series. A Good Day to Lose Guilt.
That's totally just a rough draft. I'm sure it's going to change that title because I was just, whatever, just blowing off the top of my head with a gun.
All right. From a Jewish version of Die Hard, from award-winning author comes A Good Day to Lose Geld, book 3 in the best-selling thriller series, The Torah Codes. What if a maverick or loose cannon were held hostage at a bank heist? Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like it. Well, I think loose cannon. Or maybe a maverick loose cannon. I just think you need one.
Right. But I wasn't sure which one.
All right, we'll come back. When bank robbers run a bank heist, Okay, Carl Best, scientist and smart mouth manipulating maverick, is a loose cannon or a rogue hostage in hiding and must do all he can to prevent the leader, Nasir Mattah, from killing the hostages. Once Carl's traps are set, a single phone call influences him to undo the traps and help the robbers commit their crime. Ooh. Will Carl get caught as an accomplice, or will he find a way to help the criminals and be vindicated or exonerated for his crime? And what about his wife?
You know, I thought that was too much.
I think you need to write a second paragraph for her, because okay. She gets kidnapped.
Yeah, she gets kidnapped. Jesus.
I think she totally needs to be in there. All right, so.
And it's completely unrelated, but she does get kidnapped.
Well, he has to juggle it somehow, right? Yeah. It does influence him. So what do you guys think? Maverick, loose cannon?
Well, you say Maverick in the third paragraph, so.
Say it again. So maybe loose cannon.
Yeah.
Made me laugh out loud. Is that the effect you wanted?
Well, yeah. I mean, it does have a lot of humor in it.
Okay,
so,
yeah. Carl Best. Okay.
What if a Jewish loose cannon? Would that make it more funny?
Well, we already have Jewish versions. So I don't really like this verb run. When bank robbers run a heist.
Hold a heist.
I think it's called stage a heist.
Yeah.
Stage a bank heist. Carl Best. Scientist.
Although stage to me sounds like it's fake.
All right. So, hold, run, pop. I don't know. You need better
heist a bank.
Heist a bank. I don't
know. Commit.
Commit. There we go. Commit a bank heist. It's still kind of weak, but I think it's...
We'll start there.
Scientist, Carl Beist, a scientist, smart and smart mouth, manipulating Maverick in witness protection.
Yeah.
I think you need to say that.
I don't know how much you want to reveal to the reader.
Well, they already know if they've read book one.
Book two, you mean?
Book two. Well, he...
At the very end of book two.
I don't know. And then I think you could say is a rogue... hostage, because he is rogue. He's kind of got his own thing going
on. Yeah, I agree.
Mr. Wally can to prevent the leader from killing the hostages. I think that's good stakes. Once Carl's traps are set, a single phone call influences him to undo the traps and help the robbers commit the crime. I think that's fascinating turnabout, and people are going to be so intrigued. Will he get caught as an accomplice, or will he find a way to help the criminals and be exonerated or vindicated? Why?
I wasn't sure which one sounded better.
Oh, I think exonerated would be better.
Yeah, okay.
And then I think you need to have, you know, what's her name? The wife's blurb.
there's some great comments.
Great comments. We'll read them up.
Okay. You know, this is actually, there's some great comments about yours.
Oh.
Hugh is saying to leave out the cooking reference.
Yeah.
This is a heavy and serious paragraph in a certain place, and I agree.
Yeah, okay.
And then he remembers when she killed those soldiers. It was disturbing. Smiley face.
Smiley face. Okay. Disturbing.
It was very, very powerful.
Yeah, it's intense. Yeah.
And then a radical, I'm not sure
what
that's referring to.
Well, about your loose cannon.
And then Trent's saying he doesn't like the word maverick or loose can.
Loose can, but cannon. But maybe, sure. I mean, radical.
And Hugh is saying a radical instead of this guy.
Yeah.
But he's not a radical. He's radicals suggest
has a political connotation.
Yeah, and he's the main character. He's
just got his own agenda, and he's a loose cannon on everybody's radar. The police, the bad guys. I want to say he's an oddball, a goofball, but no, he's got
a wild card.
Wild card, ooh! But putting wild card in here, what if a wild card? People won't know it's a person. Okay, I like wild card, but okay. Anything else on Ezra's
eccentric? Let's see.
I know we're almost at time.
And also, Carol suggests execute a bank heist. Bank robbers execute a bank heist.
Okay, let's put that in here. Execute. Yeah,
that's good.
All right. Great. Okay. All right. How was that, you guys? Was that useful? Was that fun? The whole, group think, you
awesome.
Know? Awesome. Yay. Great. And remember, we can also do this within the Facebook group. Super fun to do it like this. We can do it again sometime. And that's a wrap. Real quick, if you guys want to just share in the chat, what are your next steps? Mine is editing. Yours is?
Editing.
Book three.
Yeah.
What else? What are your next steps? Put one or two words in the chat. Keep it simple. Editing for Nadine.
Editing.
Yay. I better put the chat here on the screen so I don't have to look down. Let's see. Editing for Carol. Finish world building.
All I read was finish the world.
Finish the world. Okay.
So, yeah, that's a lot to take on, Hugh.
That's a lot.
But okay.
That's it. That's all. Great. Getting busy.
Trent says, cool.
Great. Excellent. Well, the replay will be up later tonight. You're ambitious, Hugh. You are ambitious. Excellent. Well, everyone, it's been fun. If you have any questions, any feedback, any suggestions, I'm also taking requests for our next call, which will be April 7th, which will be around the writing life, around editing, around first drafting, around craft. So if there's anything that's like on your agenda that you want to dive deeper in, we could do, you know, editing passages. We could talk about character. We could talk about voice. Yay. Hugh says, I love this live editing. I find it educational and motivating. I'm so glad.
Good.
Sal says, finish my editing and getting ready for Camp Nano. That's right. A lot of people are doing Camp Nano. They're writing first drafts. And I think you're kind of managing that, right, Sal, over at Savvy Authors? So that's awesome. If you want to share about that in the group, you can. Cool. So like I said, any requests for our next meeting, which will be more writer's life focused, let me know.
Something I just want to say is, you know, doing this editing together, it really makes me feel more confident, and I start to feel like maybe a bit taller in some ways. And like
taller,
yeah. That what I feel you like taller? You know, I feel really
Ezra, what are you doing?
Okay, all right.
Okay. All right.
But waiting. I feel good.
Feel good. Oh, good. And Nadine says, and to be taller, Carol says, after a new project ahead. Yes. Yay.
Sal and says, motivating. Yeah.
Not me, not with Savvy. Rose and I are in a cabin on the Nano site. Oh, good. Yay.
Whoa.
So post that information in the group. So if you want, if you're inviting people into your cabin, for those who don't know, can ask you about that. He says, Carol, you don't need to be taller. You're not short. You're concentrated awesomeness.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Nice. I'm short. I'm, you know, you can't tell when we're sitting down, but Ezra's a whole head taller than me because he's 6'3", and I'm 5'3". Okay. All right, everyone. We're going to go out and celebrate St. Patty's Day.
And the anniversary.
Our anniversary.
Our proposal
in 1999. Was it 99?
Okay.
In 1999, Ezra proposed to me with a song in Paris. It was beautiful. Don't drink too much. Yeah. Happy Guinness Day. All right, everyone. Bye. Have a good night. Thank you.